welcome to the New York Film Academy Hour. This is episode 20. Class, get ready, because we're about to do YouTube Producing 101. It is going to be intense, it's going to be fun, and hopefully you'll see some familiar shows. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies.
Hi guys, I'm Joelle.
I'm Pega.
And we're so excited because today we have Jenny Powell in the studio.
Hi,
you guys definitely know Jenny's work if you're a fan of YouTube and you've got here. So I'm going to assume that you are a fan of the YouTube. She has won, not one, but two Emmys. First for her Lizzie Bennet Diaries series, which was amazing and came out in 2012. Then Emma Approved, which she followed up with in 2013. She's currently working on The New Adventures of Peter and Wendy. But she's also responsible for executive producing one of the first internet cult classics, Lonely Girl 15. She's here to tell us how to cultivate an audience, why YouTube shows work, and how to create content people actually want to watch. Hi, Jenny. How you doing?
Good. That was a great intro. Thanks. I do have to say, I am currently an executive producer on Lonely Girl.
I'm so sorry.
I was not
yes.
originally.
Okay. All right. Okay.
That's a whole, like, story I'm sure we'll talk about. So
I'm excited about it. So we usually start with the same question, which is,
sure.
When did you first know you were in love with movies? But I want to pivot that question a bit for you. And when did you first know you loved YouTube?
Well, I started watching YouTube pretty early on because I worked in reality TV at the time. Mm-hmm. And when I had downtime, which was a lot of the times, because you'd have to be waiting. Like, reality TV was a lot about waiting. Like, when are we going to get tapes? When are we going to get edits?
What was your role in reality?
I was a supervising producer.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which was what it sounds like. I was supervising everyone else. So I was like, oh, you're doing your job? Good. Okay, I'm going back to my desk now. And so when I had downtime, I would watch YouTube videos because they were quick and I could get pulled away from them at any time and wouldn't really miss anything, and just started really getting involved in, I really loved, we called them vloggers back then, but
yes,
now they call
yes.
them influencers.
Sure do.
Which, oh gosh, yeah.
Which is, personality-driven content. So I was like, this is really engaging and cool, and this is a new format, and my brain just started going, because I do this, I was like, well, why isn't anyone doing scripted? And then someone did.
Yeah, they did.
In a big way.
In a giant and shocking way. So, when did you discover Lonely Girl 15 then? Let's just jump straight
sure.
into it.
So, I discovered Lonely Girl 15 because a friend of mine actually came up to me and was like, hey, you watch these internet people, right? And I was like, yeah, I watch the internet people. Because a little bit more background, my degree is actually in psychology.
Oh,
not
yeah.
It's not in entertainment at all.
What are you doing
all.
Here?
Yeah, I know, right? So my friend knew that about me and that I watched a lot of these YouTubers. He was like, there's this one girl. I'm concerned about her. I think something's up. And I was like, oh, okay, well, I'll watch some of her videos. And then I started watching some. We watched a couple of the videos. And I turned to him and I said, are you messing around with me? And he's like, what are you talking about? I was like, this is scripted. And it's brilliant, and I must know who's doing it. And he's like, no, she's real.
Oh, my gosh.
Because this was before.
I remember this fight, yes.
Yeah. It was before it came out that it was a scripted show.
Mm-hmm.
I should have bet him a lot of money, because I would have won a lot of money, because I was right. And everybody says, how did you know? And I can't really pinpoint what it was. It was just an instinct, I don't know. And I was just like, yeah, I want to do this. This is what I want to do. I want to use this new technology for storytelling. I think it's brilliant.
That's amazing. So let's go back to the beginning of your career. So you mentioned reality TV. Was that your first job in psychology?
Yeah. So I taught sex education for a while after college. It was a very hard job. and I just reached, and I was actually working, I was in the middle of a master's degree because I was like going all in on this psychology thing. And I still love it. And actually, it's really good that I did it, because having that skill base for producing is pretty important.
Sure.
And I just realized one day, I was like, what am I doing? There was this whole, like, because I did drama in high school. I went to this college that I went to because I wanted to go into the entertainment field, but I got totally sidetracked by this other thing, which is fine. I just got diverted for a little while. And so I just packed up, quit my program and moved to LA.
Oh wow.
But I was in San Diego. So for me, it wasn't like...
You're just hopping cities.
You know, I was hopping cities, yeah.
Okay.
And my parents are still there, so...
Okay.
Yeah.
So then, Do you straight away start in post-supervising?
Or? No. I did extra work for the first 8 months because I was like, I don't have a film school background. I need to get on sets.
I want to pause right there. If you guys are new to LA mm-hmm. or just come out to LA, extras work is fantastic way so to get good. Involved into the industry.
Yep.
We are right up the street from Central Casting. Yes. They do a really awesome job. Yeah. They help place you. You get to know people. And mm-hmm. I know a ton of cinematographer friends who moved out here after college started off by doing extra work and then got on film sets because they hung out with the camera crew. And yep. they invited them on. Yep. So you're the first person who's told that story, and I think it's yeah. great because I know a ton of people who do it when they get out here.
Yeah, yeah. And totally. It was great. I mean, it's a lot of, like, you have to call in every day mm-hmm. and make sure you're booking yourself and all that good stuff. But after a while, you build up, like, connections with them, the casting people, and they start calling you.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Because they're like, you know, if you're reliable, basically, if you like have a brain in your head and you're like on time, they're like, you're the best.
Yes, it's so true. I did one day on mm-hmm. 24 back when nice. 24 was on, and the casting director called and was like, what are you doing the rest of the summer? And exactly. I was on there every single day.
Yep.
Wow. But
yep.
so true.
Yeah. So, I did that. And then also around that same time, I had several friends who were in film school. So I just hung out with them.
Nice.
And worked on their shoots. In fact, I had a bunch of friends that were going to the Los Angeles Film School, and I was there so much that security actually thought I was a student and started just letting me in.
Nice.
I was like, okay, gonna go use the Avid. Don't mind me. So I guess in a weird way, I sort of got a film school education, but I didn't pay for it. Sorry, I NYFA. but yeah, that was just my route. I got my education in kind of a different way than a lot of people.
So the hands-on approach mm-hmm. is just like the
way to go. I kind of learned that. That's the way I learn. Mm-hmm. Is I'm not a book learner. I'm a do learner.
Yeah. When it came down time for me to choose where I wanted to go to school, I went for theater and then switched over to filmmaking. But it was important to me to have a practical education mm-hmm. as opposed to a theoretical because I was mm-hmm. like, I already did that part.
Right.
I read all the books.
And that's why I love working at NYFA, because it is hands-on. I don't mean to turn this into like
an infomercial, but I feel you.
So, come to NYFA.
Be proud of where you work.
No, I totally am. So, I just find it funny that I stole an education from the LA Film School and now I teach at NYFA.
Yes. No, putting your resources forward. I love it. So, a lot of the shows you've produced mm-hmm. from Elizabeth Bennet to Wendy to Emma are really old characters that you've mm-hmm. helped modernize and mm-hmm. kind of bring forth. First, I guess I want to ask, have you always been a voracious reader and love these characters? And second, what makes them long-lasting and enduring to audiences even today?
Sure. I'm a huge reader, so yeah, I love literature. I just said earlier that I wasn't a book learner, but I do love to read. So totally different things.
Fiction.
But what was interesting about how Lizzie Bennet came about is it started as an idea. Mm. And the original idea was not Pride and Prejudice.
Oh.
The original idea was Hank Green, and we were chatting online, because he doesn't live here. Mm-hmm. So we were chatting online, and he said, Jenny, what do you think about this idea? What if we adapted a novel to YouTube? And I went, oh my God, it's brilliant. We have to do it. What book are we doing? We have to do it now before somebody else thinks of this. This is an amazing idea. We have to do right. this. And he goes, oh yeah, I know exactly what book we're doing. And I was like, okay, what? The Diary of Anne Frank. And I was like, Hank, no. We cannot do The Diary of Anne Frank. That's first of all, how do you modernize that story?
Right.
And second of all, it's not public domain.
Mm.
And he's like, well, this is why I'm asking you, because I remember you did that Anne Frank web series at that one. I did. We'll get to that. But so I was like, yeah, but that's parody, dude. And I was not trying to modernize it at all. Mm-hmm. It was still set in the past. And I was like, okay, Hank, it's not going to happen. And he's like, well, I'm going to look into it anyway. I was like, okay, but don't take too long, because time's ticking.
Book idea. Let's do it.
We got to get it on this. So I started pitching him, like, Shakespeare and, like, and I was pitching him dramas. Like, I wanted to do Titus Andronicus.
Ooh, I love it!
But he was like, but there's, like, tongues getting ripped out and feeding people to people. And I was like, yeah, so we can do it.
It's awesome.
I didn't get my way on doing a dark one until we did Frankenstein. Ew. Finally, I was like, and I wanted to do Jekyll and Hyde, but whatever. I actually developed Jekyll and Hyde, which I'm still holding on to, because I was like, I still think it would be so good.
I'd really love for you to do a Dorian Gray with, like, a cell phone as opposed to,
oh my
like,
gosh. Social media. So brilliant.
Right?
Taking that. But yeah, it took him a good several months before he looped back and was like, okay, I'll let it go. I'll drop it. And one of the big reasons for that is his brother, John, who's the author of The Fault in Our Stars.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Part of that novel is set in the Anne Frank house. So he actually had to go through the pro- 'cause anytime you use the house, her likeness, her name, her image, you have to go through the Anne Frank Foundation get permission. Yeah, gotcha. And Hank watched John go through this process and it was like, so much work. He's like, no, it's not worth it.
Changed my mind.
And then he came back to me. But then even then he said, well, we'll do a different book as a proof of concept. Then I'll go back to the Anne Frank Foundation. I was like, okay, whatever, dude. We're doing something else. What do we want to do? And it was actually his wife who suggested Pride and Prejudice because it's her favorite book. Mm. And I was like, oh, man, I haven't read that in years. I gotta go back and read it again and see if it works. And he did the same. And we both agreed. We were like, this is the one. Nice. This is the one. And it was the perfect one.
It's wonderful. So, and then, I guess the follow-up question was, what makes these characters kind of enduring to audiences, and how, and maybe what's the process of modernizing them like?
Well, really, it was breaking down the novel into, like, because it's really set out in sections, like, there was a section, the beginning, and then they go to Netherfield, and then they do this,
and then the soldiers come,
exactly. So we kind of, like, laid it all out, and then we went, okay, of all these major things, what's today's equivalent?
Okay.
And we did it that way. And why I think they're so enduring is the relatability. Mm-hmm. And the fact that there are modern equivalents possible. Some were more challenging than others. Like, we had to figure out the whole, like, why are they staying at Netherfield so long in this modern day when they can just take a plane? Because back then it was like you had to walk or take a wagon. Mm-hmm. So we were just like, oh, we'll make them the neighbor. And it's just that they go over there a lot.
Coffee.
That works. And then the whole scandal with Lydia.
Mm-hmm. She gets married.
She's an officer. So in our version, she makes a sex tape.
Oh, wow. Super modern.
That's so great. So, yeah.
Are they still teaching these books in school?
I think so.
Yeah. Okay.
And we did get a lot of people who were watching it because they loved the book, but we did get a lot of people who were like, I read the book because of this.
Wow.
Which was awesome.
See, that's what I was wondering.
That's like, incredible.
For the young, super young millennials.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They're seeing this before the book. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Okay. So talk to us a little bit about going from Elizabeth Bennet to Emma's story.
Uh-huh.
Were you guys kind of like, okay, well, the Austen thing works, so we'll just stick with what we know?
Yeah.
Or were you just, are these characters just that inspiring? You're like, we can do Emma just as easily.
It was interesting because I felt that we should do something else. Mm-hmm. But Bernie Sue, who's one of the other creators, he was really passionate about the character of Emma, which I can totally see because a lot of her personality traits are traits that he has in him. So I was like, I am not surprised. And he really, the concept with Emma to take it to the next level was, can we brand a character?
Mm-hmm.
And so Emma, he was really like, let's make Emma a brand.
Oh, okay.
Can we do that in a way that's still a compelling story and doesn't feel like branding?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was really successful. I mean, it won another Emmy, so.
Yeah, it did. That's amazing.
I want to ask you, when you're working on these series as executive producer, what is your, I mean, we know you're shaping the landscape, we know you're hiring and getting the crews together. What is your main goal with these, and I guess what are your main duties?
Very rarely executive produce.
Okay.
I'm usually the producer. And
Copy.
The producer is the one who's the day-to-day, boots on the ground. Like, and basically, the way I think of producing is it's a giant puzzle. Mm-hmm. So, and when I come into it, there's just a bunch of pieces scattered all over the place. And I have to put them all together to make it a cohesive whole and to make it all work. And I also really, I treat it like a game. Because to me, it's fun. And I just like to think of it that way. So that's basically what the producer is. You don't see them a lot because they're off doing other things. Because they're thinking about next week while you're getting this week done.
Yeah.
And it's like always being like a couple steps ahead. And you also have to have the ability to think on your feet. Because no matter how much you plan ahead of time, something will go wrong. And you just have to be ready for it. You don't know when or what, like, an actor gets sick or, you know, like, it could be anything. Like, somebody falls and breaks their leg on set and you're like, oh, crap. This was why I got insurance, so yay. So that kind of stuff. So,
how long is each episode?
Of Lizzie Bennet Diaries? Mm-hmm. They ranged between 2 minutes and I think the longest is 7 minutes, okay. 7 or 8 minutes.
So how long is production usually since they're so short? I've always wondered.
So the way we produce Lizzie Bennet Diaries, and this kind of ties into like, because I learned this vlog style narrative from working on Lonely Girl, and Lonely Girl's production schedule was insane.
Really?
Mm. We were only shooting a week in advance, and so we were constantly shooting because we wanted to leave it open enough to adjust based on fan feedback.
Oh, wow.
But because of that, our production schedule was nuts. It was nuts. And occasionally we'd have to, like, bring an actor in and be like, well, you gotta shoot this really quick video because we gotta plug this hole that, like, this fan noticed, da-da-da-da. So when we started planning for Lizzie, I was like, I don't want to do it that way. we will die. And especially Ashley, who's our lead, mm-hmm. like, she's in almost every single episode. Right. So it's like, for her, it's crazy if we're constantly calling her in and having to do all that. So the way we set it up is we would shoot a month's worth of episodes in one day. We were shooting between 50 and 60 pages
a day?
Wow. I tell anybody in production this, and they're like, that is impossible. I was like, we did it.
Okay, well, let's break that down a little bit sure. for our audience. So, how many... You guys only have the one set, right?
Yes.
So that's a little bit helpful. Yes. We're not doing big
moves. We're not changing the camera. We occasionally change the lighting based on time of day.
Sure.
But we would shoot in the order so that we would change them the least amount of times.
Got it.
And she was just a rock star. Like, yeah. She came so prepared. We did have a mic stand with the lines on it just because it's so much content in one day.
Absolutely.
And you do have the ability to pause where the... So basically when we script it, we write in where the jump cuts go. And we shoot it in those sections. Got so it. That she has time to, like, breathe in between and take a look at her script if she needs to. And so we'll shoot, like, each section until we're happy with it, and then move on to the next section.
And so it's just one location, right?
One location.
Okay, in her room.
So it sounds like the key...
Well, we moved over time, but, like, for a whole month, they would be in one place.
Gotcha.
And then
okay.
we might move them the following. We had to move them at one point because Lizzie Bennet's bedroom was my bedroom.
And get out.
During the shooting, my now husband, he was my boyfriend then, moved in with me. And it got really tight, and we're like... We want to move, so we're going to have to figure out
how to get them out of this. Gonna...
So it just moved. She moved from vlogging in her bedroom to doing it in the den, in the house, because by that time everyone knew she was doing it. So it was actually a really justified reason that she moved.
Yeah.
But that's why she moved, is because we moved out of the place.
I love it. So it sounds like what's most important in these things is organization and preparation up
Absolutely.
Front. And then in your casting, making sure that you're casting somebody who can handle that amount of material memorization and is willing to be a little bit flexible.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I did the casting on Lizzie Bennet myself because I was like, I don't trust anyone with this. Because originally, Hank and Bernie were thinking about casting an influencer as the lead.
As you do. A lot of people do.
I've been saying since the beginning that that's not a smart move.
And tell us, because that was all my questions for you.
I fought them on it. The biggest reason why it doesn't work is, one, I mean, there are certain vloggers who can act. A bunch of them can't.
Sure.
But they're still being put in these roles that are, like, way above what they can handle. And then the second reason is their audience don't want to see them playing someone else.
Right,
the whole reason that the audience loves them is them, not them pretending to be someone
sure.
else. And they can kind of see through that cast. They know it's stunt casting. And they might go see it once to support, but it's not going to, like, that's still not enough to make it successful. You know?
That's interesting, because I've been hearing a lot of different opinions on casting stars. And a lot of people say, as you say, you know, we're hearing, like, you know, having an Instagram following does not equate talent. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, or drive and work and understanding, like, a film set is a crazy busy place. Everyone needs to become prepared and mm-hmm. be professional. And mm-hmm. if you don't understand the amount of work that goes in, time and money-wise, before you mm-hmm. even get to set, you may not respect the set like you should.
Right.
But from a lot of young producers, I've heard, yeah, but this gets my movie funding. The minute I have somebody who has 20,000 followers in a lead role, I can have people start to give me mm-hmm. money to actually complete the project.
That may be true now, but it's quickly changing because they're realizing that just shoving them in there is not a measure of success.
Good things to note. Good yeah. things to note.
The thing I hear more now when I go into pitch is they go, what's the world? What's the... they want franchises now. Yeah, they want do. Franchises.
That universe building is intense.
Star Wars, mm-hmm. Marvel, the Marvel Universe, DC Universe, it's working. And they're like, oh, we need more of that, which is great for a producer like me.
Yeah, it is.
Because I just think that way. That's mm-hmm. when I create something, I'm creating a world, not just a single story. That's just how I've always thought creatively.
That's great.
Absolutely.
So I'm excited. I've been waiting for this moment.
It's finally coming together.
So, with YouTube, do they mm-hmm. have a way of rating the material the way that movie theaters
no.
do? No. So you can put anything and...
It not might anything. Get flagged.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It might get flagged. You're not supposed to use, like... You're not supposed to harm anyone in a video or overly use too much language. Like, a few F-bombs here and there is not going to do it, but...
Okay.
Like, PewDiePie got in big trouble because he was using a lot of Nazi imagery mm-hmm. in his videos. And that's one of the big reasons that, one, Maker dropped him.
Yeah.
Because Maker's owned by Disney, and Disney went, wait a second. What?
Who? We can't what? Do that.
Huh? But the thing was, the imagery he was using was to make a point. He's not a Nazi supporter. He's not. But a bunch of white supremacists say, we love PewDiePie because this. And mm-hmm. I was like, you're not even getting that he's being ironic. He's not supporting you. You don't, and I don't know why they don't get that, but I guess it's over their head. But but unfortunately, he's paying the price for it, but mm-hmm. not really, because he's still mm-hmm. the number one channel on YouTube.
Right.
Wow. And no one shows signs of catching him anytime soon. And now he's a free agent. He can do whatever he wants.
Yeah, it seems he's kind of impenetrable. I've seen countless, like, from name, like, journalists mm-hmm. about behavior or conduct or paying for reviews and all these other kinds of mm-hmm. things, and he can't be touched. People like PewDiePie.
Yeah.
So I want to ask you about YouTube as a platform, but before we go into that, I mm-hmm. want to ask you, we kind of touched on a little bit, but when did you get involved with Lonely Girl 15?
I got involved when, I'm going back to this Anne Frank web series that I did. So, in the Lonely Girl community, mm-hmm. the creators really encouraged the audience to create their own content within the world. So, they were very much like, create your own characters. They occasionally would actually take a fan character and make them a real character. So it's called canonizing them. So they became canon. And a lot of the community, that was their goal. They were like, oh, I got to get my character canonized. That's like the ultimate. And I was like, I just want to work on the show. How do I get that? Mm-hmm. And so I was like, well, maybe I should try to get their attention by doing some fan content.
Sure.
But I didn't want to just do what everyone else was doing.
Right.
I was like, I don't want to just make up a character and play it and, like, do it that way. I was like, I want to do a parody. And at the time, I was doing sketch writing at UCB. And oh, wow. I had a group that we were writing a sketch show together, and it was called The History of the World According to YouTube. Which was taking historical figures and then viral videos and mashing them up.
I love that.
And so the first idea that popped out of my mouth when we decided that's what we were going to do, I was like, well, if Anne Frank had a camera, she'd video blog. I was like, whoa, totally. There's a lot of similarities between the Lonely Girl 15 character and Anne Frank, mm-hmm. both in personality and, like, the situation. Like, she's trapped. Mm-hmm. She's trying to get away from bad people. Mm-hmm. I was like, I could totally take the first episode of Lonely Girl and rewrite it in, like, 40s slang and then have it be Anne Frank.
Amazing.
And so I was like, it's super simple. Like, I'll just play Anne. It's easy. We'll make it black and white. Like, we did the whole thing. And it was like one, just her saying, hi, I'm Anne. Just basically a parody of the first episode mm-hmm. of Lonely Girl. And so we did it. And I was like, I don't know. Are we crossing a line? This is taking a chance. I don't know. I was like, I'm going to put it up. And if the fans don't like it, fine, I'll stop.
Sure.
And hopefully I don't offend anyone. And I put it up and they loved it. And they're like, do more, do more. And I was like, okay, I guess we're doing more. Okay. And then over the course of time, I was like, we have to come up with a device that gets her out of the room, though. Mm. Like, her just vlogging in an attic is going to get real boring fast. And so we decided her teddy bear was a time travel device. Wow. And then it just, like, from there, it was just like, like, there were portals, and she went to the past and tried to assassinate Hitler and failed. And then she went to the future. And, like, they threw her a party because they all knew she was going to die. But nobody would tell her she's going to. It's like, I was like, how are we getting away with this? This is crazy. Mm. But people loved it. And the creators loved it because one of the creators reached out to me and said, I want to be in your show.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, what?
I want to be on your show.
Yeah. She was like, can you write me a character? I want to be on your show. And I was like, oh, yeah, I can. It's going to be the best thing you've ever seen, because then you're going to hire me. Because I was already thinking, like, this is a job interview.
Oh, yes.
This is the weirdest job interview I'll ever have. But that's what this is. So I organized. That was when Anne Frank traveled to the future. Mm. So her character was, like, an older sister, like, helping her, like, wanting to show her the outside world. But not telling her the truth is that, oh, by the way, you're going to die. which is weird. But
so you mentioned putting a video up on YouTube, mm-hmm. and if it fails, do you take it off or do you leave it?
No, you leave it.
You leave it.
You leave it.
Okay.
That's good. Integrity. Come on, back up your work.
I was going to ask you, too, because I know a lot of students are concerned about, like, well, when should I start putting my work out there? They're concerned about, like, you know, it doesn't feel hyper-polished or, you know, maybe they've written something better since. And they're like, well, I'll start with that one. And then, of course, that one comes around. And they're like, but I had something better. Do you say you just put it out there and let the world decide? Or
yeah? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I didn't know what I was doing in the beginning. And, I mean, I sort of did because I had a little bit of a production background. But, like, and we'll watch, you know, I think you're going to show the first episode of Lonely Girl. That, I mean, it's not... It's not rocket science. It's a girl talking in her bedroom.
Let's take a look at it now, actually.
Perfect. Hi, guys. So this is my first video blog. I've been watching for a while, and I really like a lot of you guys on here. I really like Pay to the Order of Two. You're really funny, and your videos are always really interesting. You seem really nice. And then there's the wine cone, or wine, just wine cone, I'm not sure. You are totally retarded, but I like it. Well, I guess a video blog is about me. My name is Bree, I'm 16. I don't really want to tell you where I live, because you could, like, stalk me. well, what you need to know about my town is that it's really boring. Like, really boring. Really, really boring. That's probably why I spend so much time on my computer. I'm a dork. I didn't really have a plan for this video blog, but I guess I'll just do this. Okay, I hope you guys enjoyed that. Bye. In so much
space. Totally simple.
Yeah.
One actress.
It's all about her and just getting to know her and her quirkiness and her.
And the first video was so captivating, even though it was so simple. I was so shocked when you said, you're like, oh no, this is scripted. Because I remember actively, like, it's so weird to think about, because as you mentioned earlier, this is the 10-year anniversary. You guys just released another video. Surprising fans. Which was amazing. And if you were around in 08, I was a senior in high school. And I remember the word of mouth going around, like, there's a girl online. I was like, I don't even know what you guys are talking about. But, like, 5 episodes in, everyone is addicted and needing to understand what's happening to her and what's going on. And it was fascinating. And from that, we get, like, you know, so many additional YouTube stories. I mean, like, you could trace bits of, like, the Wendy Adams character back to that, who, if you guys watched when she was allowed to have her show before the Adams Family, was like, stop that. She was great. She was going around California being Wendy Adams, right, raising on people's parade. To even Carmilla, because those girls are amazing and doing similar one camera in the bedroom kind of stuff. I wanted to ask you, so back in a way, you just did it and hope people liked it. If you guys know of... Donald Glover did the same thing with his guys. They were doing sketch comedy on YouTube before anybody understood.
Yeah, comedy.
Yeah, before what it was. But now, there's, like, a bunch of different ways to get started. You could go YouTube, where you're putting it up and you have a production company behind you as you're doing it. Students are posting their projects. Some people, like the Carmilla kids, were able to team up with, I think Codex is their sponsor, who financially supports this show, which is just kind of incredible. Is there a better way? Is it based on story? Is it just get in how you can fit in?
Basically, I say it's get in how you fit in. Like, really think about, like, what content do you like? And what do you want to be making? Because there's so many options now. It's like, if you're a musician, then you want to do music videos. If you're a video gamer, you probably want to do Twitch. It's just really coming up with, like, what is my story I want to tell, or what is me? Because there's a difference between if you're doing scripted or you want to become an influencer, a personality. So it's really sitting down and honing in on what the core of you is.
Okay.
Because I tried to vlog for maybe 2 weeks, and I was like, nope, not my style. I want to produce other people's stuff. I don't want to be an in front of the camera person. Even though I get roped into almost every series and show that I work on, they're like, oh, we need somebody to play the maid, Jenny. I was like, oh man, I've been a maid like 5 times in web series.
True, especially my roommate works in reality, and she's like, I've never worked in a show where they haven't been like, can you just like walk by or just be? And she's like, I work behind the scenes.
I know.
So that's a heads up. If you guys don't like being on camera, if you work around a camera, you might have to be in front of one for like 5 minutes.
Yeah, but it's not so bad.
No, you get over it. I want to talk to you very briefly about YouTube Red.
Sure.
And your feelings on that. Because, you know, we've been talking about YouTube and posting and fitting where you can. YouTube opens this new platform service. It starts so slow in building and trying to get numbers. And I think because me personally, when they were like, oh, you can pay for a subscription service. And I was like, what do I get with it? And they're like, more stuff from YouTube creators. I'm like, I get that for free.
Right.
It's weird for me to pay for it, especially when I support a lot of people do like Patreon or other things like that, or, you know, you buy their DVDs or something. Because you do want to support, you know, the people out there creating content, because it's a ton of work. But man, like a subscription service, I don't know. So I was wondering what your thoughts on
YouTube were. Yeah, I think they didn't have a full plan. They should have had way more content prepared before they launched. The reason that no one stayed is that they paid the money, went and watched everything in this free 7 days, and then were like, bye! Like, because there wasn't enough there to keep them there. And all influencer-driven. Why? Why not try something new and different? Or, I don't know, bring back Lonely Girl.
Yeah!
Because I actually sat down with them and talked to them about that. When we did the 10-year anniversary video, someone at YouTube saw it and said, come in, pitch to us. And there's still time, YouTube.
Correct this mistake. What?
Because
I feel like something like that, especially with 10 years and especially being the first viral video of its kind, having trouble understanding why not.
For whatever reason, it just didn't fit in with what they were looking for at that time. Dang. And I got really encouraged because we actually went back to them. I also do casting. So me and I have another casting associate. We work together. We went back to pitch them, like, hire us as your in-house casting people. And we will cast real actors, not influencers. I mean, I'm not against casting influencers. I've done it before. In New Adventures of Peter and Wendy, we had Megan Camarena, who is Strawberry 17, but I knew she could act. She actually came in and auditioned for the part, and she fit the role. So she got the job. But I don't believe in shoehorning them in for the sake of shoehorning them in.
I've certainly seen projects and then heard horror stories about casting somebody who just couldn't fulfill the obligations of the role, and I know it's frustrating.
It's not their fault either. No. And so it's frustrating on both sides, I'm sure. I'm sure they don't feel good about it, and, you know, they're getting a nice paycheck, which is awesome for them.
Well, and it feels like the natural next step as an influencer. You know, you're supposed to gain followers, and you do either TV or film or something, and then hopefully you launch a career outside of just the internet, which is weird because the internet is expensive.
But you have to put in the work.
Yes.
You can't just be like, I have followers, but I never took an acting class. Exactly. I didn't go to film school. Like, Michael Gallagher is a perfect example of someone who put in the work.
Yes. We actually have Michael Gallagher on the show.
He's great. He's awesome. I've worked with him before. He's wonderful. Fantastic. Oh, other fun fact about Lonely Girl, Jessica Rose, who's the lead, went to NYFA.
Oh, what?
Yeah, she booked Lonely Girl right after graduating NYFA.
So we'll be reaching out to you, Jessica Rose.
Yes.
This
is new information. She's currently in Australia, but I think it sounds like she's moving back out here.
Yes.
So I'll let you know. I'm sure she'd do it.
I'm going to stalk you now.
Okay.
So you mentioned Peter and Wendy. Let's just jump into it. Tell us about this new show you have.
Okay. Well, actually, it's been on 3 seasons. We actually just wrapped our newer. My newest. Yes, that's true. It is a modern-day adaptation of Peter Pan. At first, because I worked on Lizzie Bennet Diaries, Emma Approved, and then I did the casting on Frankenstein, but I actually didn't produce it because I was like, I want to stop doing adaptations. I don't want to get known as, like, that's all I do, is these YouTube vlogger adaptations. Not that I don't love them.
Sure.
But the creator, Kyle Walters, approached me because I'd actually worked with him on Welcome to Sanditon. It was actually a short-run show that ran between Lizzie Bennet and Emma.
So cute.
People don't remember it. But it was cute and it was fun. And I learned a lot from it that we actually took to New Adventures of Peter and Wendy. So Kyle was one of the stars in that little mini show, and he came up to me at a Pemberley Digital Christmas party, I think is when it happened. He walked up to me and he's like, what if I wanted to do Peter Pan? And I was like, oh, you literally pitched me the one project that I will go back on my word and predict, because Peter Pan is like, that's my childhood.
Oh, yeah?
Like, I was obsessed. I was like, I'm going to Neverland. I'm just waiting for him to come pick me up. Let's go. So he literally pitched me the one thing that I'm like, oh, I can't say no to that. I can't say no. And he's like, yeah, well, I want to do it modernized, and I want Peter Pan to be in his mid-20s and having to deal with the fact that he's growing up. And I was like, oh, I love it. Let's do it. Oh, my gosh. So I did.
All right, let's check the trailer for this because it is super cutesy.
And today's topic is growing up.
The only thing you'll ever need to know about growing up is... don't do it, it's a trap.
No.
No, okay, you too.
Remember when I said that everyone grows up? Well, everyone but one. Wendy Moira Angela Darling.
It was the most beautiful name I'd ever heard.
Would it be weird if Wendy and I were more than just friends?
Well, that changes a couple things.
Peter Penguin to match your service.
Am I the only normal one in this family, or is it genetic, and I'm just a ticking time bomb of crazy?
You taste as horrible as you read!
I'm not comfortable being on camera. You never know who's watching.
The world must be clean!
That was thorough.
Thank you.
As I've rejected so many men, and she's been rejected by so many men.
I'm Michael, the good-looking sibling. I play a lot of video games, and I smoke a lot of
hams! Yes, you do. You smoke those hams, and they're delicious. I know that growing up can seem scary, but we've all got to do it.
Man, what do you think life would be like 5 years from now?
It is not always about what you want, Peter. That's right, my darlings. I'm ready to leave Neverland.
What is so wrong with Neverland?
Have you ever wanted to see the world? Did you put your mark on it?
Is want so bad? I mean, is it bad that I want to tell you how great you are?
Let's get crazy!
Please, let me finish.
I thought this day would never come.
Yes!
Let's hunt.
Freedom! Come on! Yep!
I am both impressed and a little freaked out.
Thank you.
That's gonna be awesome!
Our adventure is just beginning.
Stop, 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 thrust!
laughing at America.
Love it. EpicRobotTV2.com for the people who are listening to our show, The New Adventures of Peter and Wendy.
Also available on full screen if you're... You can watch it on your phone while you're out and about. But nice. Yeah, Epic Robot TV is the main channel for it. But like I said, it's also on full screen. So.
Excellent, excellent. What do you hope people walk away with after viewing Peter and Wendy?
I just want them to feel happy. I want them to have a happy thought.
Oh, that's excellent.
Yeah, it's just, it's a sweet show. And, you know, it's about magic. And even though it's like Neverland, Ohio is a super boring town, there's still fairies and there's still mermaids. And yeah, that it was interesting when we were just starting to produce the show where we were like, well, Tinkerbell has to be in it. How visually do we deal with that?
Right.
Is she a real person in this world or is she still a fairy? And originally... Kyle, the creator, had an actress in mind, and the actress herself suggested, well, what if she's the camera? And we're like, you do realize you just pitched yourself out of a job, right? Because that is brilliant. So from Wendy's point of view, it's a regular camera because she is a vlogger herself. She does advice mm-hmm. and also some fashion stuff. Because we were able to work in a brand deal that way with a company called ModCloth. Most of her costumes come from ModCloth. Yes. They were a great partner. Because I was like, because we'd worked with them on Lizzie Bennet Diaries mm-hmm. for Jane Bennet. And when we were doing Wendy, I was like, once I knew it was going to be Paula Rhodes, mm-hmm. I was like, oh my God, she'd look amazing in everything ModCloth has. So I reached out to them and I was like, I got this for you. And they're like, anything you want. I was like, yes.
Free costumes.
Yes, free costumes. So good. But I got off track. I was talking about Tinkerbell and the whole... so from when it's Peter's point of view, he's talking directly to the camera because it is Tinkerbell.
Mm.
And he interacts with it. It floats like a fairy.
Oh.
They actually call it the Tink Cam.
Aww.
The cinematographer loved it. He's like, can I have her like fly up and down and through his legs? And I was like, yes, please. and then she bells like a bell, like classic Tinkerbell does. But then the second thing with Tinkerbell is we knew we were going to do an interactive show. So the characters were going to have social media profiles.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, well, what does Tinkerbell do? Does she, like, bop on the computer? Like, how does she communicate through social media? And we were brainstorming this. And then just out of my mouth, I was like, what if she only spoke in emojis?
Yes.
And we were like, that's it. That is how Tinkerbell talks on social media. She that's only amazing. Speaks in emojis. And the audience actually has to try to translate what she's trying to say.
This.
Yeah.
Oh,
and we actually,
goodness.
In the later season, we added an additional character called Sarah Lightly, which mm-hmm. is Slightly, which is my favorite Lost Boy. And she was a grad student that was studying the ancient fairy language. And so she started translating and... At the end of it, she wrote a paper, like, translating the fairy language.
Oh my gosh.
Now the fans can go back and retranslate all of her tweets if they want to.
Amazing.
Okay, so the depth and universe building here is intense and beautiful. Before we let you go, I just wanted to ask you. We're talking about adaptations and all these things.
Yeah.
You've got great raw material for oh my gosh, Pride and Prejudice and Emma and Peter Pan. Mm-hmm. Do you have favorite adaptations?
Do I have favorite adaptations?
Yeah, like, are you
that someone else has done?
Are you like BBC or are you Keira Knightley? Or because I have these fights a lot with my friends.
Oh. Right. My favorite adaptation is a Peter Pan one.
Mm-hmm.
It was called Peter Pan and the Pirates.
I don't know this one.
It was a Fox TV animated version of
what?
Peter Pan, and it was like additional adventures. And what I loved about it is this is why Slightly is my favorite Lost Boy. Because he said Slightly a lot. Slightly, blah, 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 Slightly, da, da, da. And they made Billy Jukes, who is a pirate, their age.
Oh, yes!
Like, he was younger, and, like, at one point, Slightly and Billy Jukes had to go off on their own separate adventure, and
oh
they became friends, and then there was all this drama of, like, but we can't be friends! We're enemies! And I was like, oh my god, this is brilliant, and I love it. So good.
Got it. So check that out, because I certainly didn't know there was an animated Peter Pan, and now I'm super excited, because I love animation. Jenny, you have been a wonderful guest.
It's
we
so
learned
fun.
So much from you.
Thank you.
About the YouTube space, and producing YouTube works, and what do followers really mean? It was, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
This is wonderful.
You're welcome.
Class, join us next week. I don't know who's going to be on the show, but as always,
someone will be.
It's going to be fun and amazing, and Pega and I will be here to walk you through it. Join us always Thursdays at 4 o'clock. If you like us on the iTunes, rate us. Let us know your thoughts. If you know a NYFA alumni or current student or anybody that you'd like to see on the show, you can always suggest that. Yeah. We're open-eared, really excited to hear from you guys. And if you follow along in the live chat or just want to comment below on the YouTube page, we love hearing for you from you. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll be back next Thursday at 4 o'clock.
Bye. From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network. The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.